Kia ora, this program is brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Wellington Access Radio, make your voice heard.
Good day everyone and welcome to Capital Irish, the Irish-related programme that comes to you every Sunday at high noon on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM. Or you can also listen to it in any part of the world on wellingtonaccessradio.org.nz. There are many podcasts there from our presenters who cover all age groups and different Irish-related topics. My name is Jim Friel, originally from County Mayo, and with me in the studio doing the important technicals is Marion Grealis, who also is one of our presenters and does a great job in both roles. We are also supported by our loyal sponsors, Peter and Susie McGuinness, the Wellington Irish Trust and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. Keeping with my general theme of recognising some important anniversary events in Irish history, over the course of 9 days in the month of May in 1916, 15 leaders of the Easter Rising were escorted from their cells in Dublin's Kilmainham Jail to the Stonebreaker's Yard, where they were executed by a firing squad. Of the 15 were the 7 signatories of the Irish Proclamation: Éamon Cant, Thomas Clarke, James Connolly, Sean McDiarmada, Patrick Pearse and Joseph Plunkett. Before and after the 1916 Rising, the Irish public were not supportive of the rebels, as close to 250,000, would you believe, Irishmen were fighting in France and in Gallipoli and in other parts in World War I. But almost overnight, after the British authorities executed the 15, they became martyred heroes and set the scene for the next 5 years with the War of Independence. It eventually brought an end to British rule in Ireland and the establishment, of course, of the Irish Free State in 1922. Sir Roger Casement, number 16 to be executed, the last man, was taken to London, where he was tried before an English jury, found guilty of organising and bringing arms to Ireland from Germany. He was executed by hanging in Pentonville Prison on the 3rd of August. His body was thrown naked into a prison grave, quicklime thrown over him, and there his remains would lie for 45 years. But in 1965, what remained of him was returned to Ireland after negotiations between both governments. He was given a hero's state funeral and buried in Glasnevin Cemetery with President Éamon de Valera and Taoiseach Sean Lamass in attendance. 5 years before he was executed, that was in 1911, the King of England, George V, Victoria's grandson and our present Queen Elizabeth's grandfather, had given him a knighthood. For what? For exposing Belgian cruelty and injustices to the native peoples of the Belgian Congo, and other exposing and supporting human rights and exposing other misery and whatever to the Amazonian natives in Peru, South America. But of course, when he returned to Ireland and wrote about similar injustices in Ireland by British authorities, he was branded a traitor. Caseman, of course, was opposed to all forms of imperialism, not just British, and all forms of injustice around the world. He was years ahead of his time. But as Ned Kelly said on his way to the scaffold in Melbourne, such is life. And now for a song. Luke Kelly singing The Foggy Jew.
Eyes down the glen one Easter morn to a city fair rode I. There are mad lines of marching men in squadrons passed me by. No fife did hum nor battle drum did sound its dread tattoo, but the Angelus bells o'er the Liffey swell rang out through the foggy dew. Right proudly high over Dublin town they hung out the flag of war. Was better to die 'neath an Irish sky than at Sulvar Sudalbar. And from the plains of Royal Meath strong men came hurrying through, while Britannia's Huns with their long range guns sailed in through the foggy dew. 'Twas Britannia bad our wild geese go, that small nations might be free. But their lonely graves are by Sulva's waves or the shore of the great North Sea. Oh, had they died by Pierce's side or fought with Calbrew, their names we would keep where the Fenians sleep 'neath the shroud of the foggy dew. But the bravest fell and the requiem bell rang mournfully. Tide in the springing of the year, and the world did gaze in deep amaze at those fearless men, but few who bore the fight that freedom's light might shine through the foggy dew.
In 2015, writer Joe Duffy wrote the untold story of the 40 children who were killed in Dublin during the Six-Day Rising. The book is called Children of the Rising. Joe Duffy says that between the North Circular and South Circular roads, from Houston Station to the Custom House, 500 people lost their lives. The majority, of course, of the casualties were civilians. The schools were closed for the Easter break. The houses were small with large families. The weather was sunny, so the children of Dublin were out playing in the streets. The most exciting week in Dublin's history, especially for children. Duffy wrote that each dead child has a story, a family, an unfilled life. They deserve to be also remembered. They are part, he says, of our history. In writing the book, Duffy brought together relatives of the dead children that had never ever met before. And of course, as he says, there are monuments to the 16 executed, but none to the 40 children or the dead civilians. But is not that the story of all wars? Anyway, I will now play singer Declan O'Rourke's moving song called Children of 16.
Town on Easter morn 100 years ago, the rebels led a rising from the city's GPO. Brave heroes and their enemies fell, civilians in between. And among the dead and fallen were the children of 16. Those children of the tenement slums who daily with their pals a brazen wild brigade sprang up two canals with their handcarts over cobbled stone. They rattled, skid and toe, barefooted as they scavenged through the crossfire and the gore. Yelling made, and snipers' bullets pierced and whipped the suffered April haze. There was fighting from the Union to the mill above the green, and it made a great excitement for children of 16. 6 days had been the rebels' pay, a grave and bloody toll. But through their blood and martyrdom, Republic soon was born. High aloft its streets and buildings now, their names can ne'er be seen, but still missing children of 16. Nor Pierce, nor Clark, McDonough, or the Connolly we know would rest where they remembered on a pedestal alone. And are they not the fathers of our nation, proud and free? And our sisters and our brothers then, the children of 16. Thank you.
Recently, I read in the Irish Central a few interesting facts about Croke Park, the famous Dublin sports stadium. Did you know that it is the fourth largest stadium in Western Europe? It's not just the home of Ireland's Gaelic Athletic Association, the GAA. It has hosted several major international music acts, including U2, Bruce Springsteen, Tina Turner, and many, many more. It hosts Six Nation rugby games, soccer internationals. It has played host to the Pope. It can hold 82,300 people seated. The famous Hill 16 is called after the 1916 Rising, as rubble from the shelling was used to construct a grassy hill on the railway end of the pitch in the 1920s. The darkest day in its history was Bloody Sunday, 21st of November 1920, when 14 people were shot dead by the British Army during a football match between Dublin and Tipperary. Soldiers opened fire on the crowd in retaliation for the shooting of 14 British intelligence spies shot by Michael Collins's spies earlier the same day during the War of Independence. The Hogan Stand at the park is named after one of the people killed that day, the Tipperary team captain, Michael Hogan. The largest crowd recorded at Croke Park was way back in 1961. Would you believe? 90,556. It was the All-Ireland football final between County Down and County Offaly. Down, if you're interested, won the game. In fact, County Down won three All-Irelands in the 1960s. A good question for your quiz night. The Mayo News recently had a story about a new pilgrimage trail launched last autumn by the Irish Minister for Community and Rural Development, Heather Humphreys, and it's called St. Declan's Way. It starts in Cashel, County Tipperary, and finishes in Ardmore, County Waterford. That is, if you're interested, 150 kilometres. It can be walked comfortably in a week, similar to the world-famous Spanish Camino Walk. St. Declan was a Christian saint from St. Patrick's time and is credited with spreading the Christian faith in Munster. Now, Kevin O'Donnell, a Tipperary man, came up with the idea of the Pilgrim Walk, inspired by his experience walking the Camino in northwestern Spain. It sounds like an interesting way to see that part of Ireland, and those who have walked it says it is a great experience. So there. Do any of you listeners know the legend of Oisin and Chiernan Og, one of Ireland's most famous legends? Well, I remember learning it when I was a child, but I was recently reminded of it when I read the ancient story in the Irish Central. It goes something like this. That's for those who've never heard the story. Once upon a time, there lived a great warrior named Oisin, the son of legendary Finn McCool, who was the leader of Fianna, a group who guarded the High King of Ireland. Now, each day, Oisin and the Fianna explored the green hills of Ireland as they hunted the land. But one day, as they hunted, a beautiful woman on a white horse came by. All the men stopped in their tracks on seeing her. She told them her name was Niamh, and that her father was king of the mystical land of Chiernan Og, a land that knows no sorrow and where nobody ever ages. She said she had heard wonderful things of a great warrior named Oisin, and I have come to take him back with me to the land of eternal youth. Now Oisin fell in love with this beautiful Niamh, and although sad to leave his family and the Fianna, he agreed to join Niamh on horseback to go and live in Chernanog, promising his father Finn McCool that he would return soon to Ireland to see him. So on the white horse they galloped across silver seas into the magical land of Chernanog. As Niamh had promised, this was a land where nobody knew sadness and nobody ever aged. Everyone there lived forever. Together Oisin and Niamh spent happy times together. But there was also a part of him that was lonely as he missed his family. Oisin begged Niamh to let him return to Ireland, but she was reluctant. Although Oisin thought that only a few years had passed, it had in fact been 300 since he left, because in the land of Chernanog, time slowed down. Eventually, Niamh saw how much her beloved Oisin missed his family. She agreed to let him return to Ireland. "Take my magical white horse," she said, "but do not get off this horse, and do not, whatever you do, let your feet touch the ground, or else you will never be able to return to Chernanog again." So Oisin set off across the seas on the white horse and arrived in Ireland. When he looked around, he could see that things had changed. The Fianna no longer hunted the green fields, and the grand castle that once housed his family was crumbling and covered in ivy. As he searched for someone familiar, he came across some old men and asked them about his father, Finn McCool. They told him that Finn McCool had died many, many, many years ago. He was heartbroken at the news. The men were having difficulty moving a large rock, not thinking clearly because of his grief. Oisin leaned down from his horse to help them roll the rock, and in doing so, he lost his balance and fell from the magical horse. When he touched the ground, he immediately aged the 300 years that he had missed in Ireland and died. But of course the legend lives on. It doesn't tell us what happened to the magical horse. I imagine the horse returned to Niamh in Chernanog. Of course there are many other Irish legends, but that's one of the more popular ones. Other news items during the past week in Ireland was the results of the election in the north. Now, as predicted by the polls, Michelle O'Neill and Sinn Féin won the most seats, 27 in Stormont, historically the first time ever. That's in the Northern Ireland Assembly, of course. Now, the main question will be whether the second largest party, the DUP, with 25 seats, not too many behind Sinn Féin, will refuse, and which will they have continued for 8 months. They haven't sat in the House. And will they continue with their childish behaviour? Well, it's nothing new. Between 2017 and 2020, that was for 3 years, they also refused to sit. So it's nothing new for them. Anyway, now Sinn Féin is the largest party, not only in the north, but also in the whole of the island of Ireland. We are in for interesting times. Scotland's First Minister, Nicola Sturgeon, is very impressed with the success of Sinn Féin. And she said last week, that there are now big questions about the future of the UK as a political entity. Of course, she wants complete Scottish independence. And if that happens, it could, according to the pundits, easily lead the way to United Ireland. The centrist Alliance Party, which are very pro-European Union, did better than all the parties in the North in the elections. They doubled their number, and they now command 13.5% of the first preference votes. And they're also led by a woman, Naomi Long. And she, Naomi, has urged the DUP party to be sensible. Stop sulking, she said, and work with Sinn Féin for a better Northern Ireland. But of course, according to the, because of the Good Friday Agreement deal, you can't have a government. It's got to be shared by the two major parties. So if no executive is formed, and it doesn't look good, the Northern Secretary must call a new election within 24 weeks. But can you see that making any difference? Well, I can't. So watch this space. Well, my time is up. Thank you for listening. I will go out with a lovely musician on the tin whistle, Julie Madden. And the tune is The Women of Ireland. Fare thee well.
Been listening to Capital Irish on Wellington Access Radio 106.1 FM thanks to the generosity of our sponsors. We couldn't be here without them. Our sponsors are Wellington Irish Trust, Susie and Peter McGuinness, and the Hutt Valley Irish Society. A very big thank you from all of us on the Capital Irish team.
That program was brought to you by Wellington Access Radio. Get your voice heard.
Thanks, New Zealand On Air, for funding accessmedia.nz.